is a war between the rich and poor, a war between the man and the woman. There is a war between the...
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
China has made a dramatic reversal in its energy policies. According to British newspaper The Independent, China has slowed or halted the building of 22 major dams and power stations out of concerns over the environmental impact. The Chinese State Environment Protection Agency says that the projects will not continue until a proper assessment of their impact is made. According to the Christian Science Monitor, a growing number of Chinese support tougher policies to protect nature. The move comes just in time for the implementation of the Kyoto Protocol on Wednesday. The United States is one of the few industrialized nations to not sign on to the Kyoto Protocol. The Bush administration cites growing pollution in China and the unwillingness of the Chinese government to intervene in the environment as one of the primary reasons for not joining.
Since Walmart announced last week that it's closing a store in Jonquière, Quebec that went union, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union has been gearing up to challenge the anti-union retail giant. UFCW Canada's Michael Fraser says public sentiment in Quebec is against Walmart's closing of the store because it went union.
There's been a very public reaction to their announcement because the people in Quebec believe that this is unfair, and the only reason that they're putting these people out of work is because of the fact that they exercise their democratic right to join a union.
Fraser says the UFCW will press the workers' case with Quebec's labor board, and that will include filing unfair labor practice charges against Walmart. Fraser vows the UFCW will continue its fight to organize Walmart. Fraser says a public campaign underway protesting Walmart's closing of the union store has taken on a life of its own as Walmart's true anti-worker nature is revealed. The UFCW says this is not about profit, it's about power.
New York State once again has the highest percentage of organized labor in the nation. New numbers from the U.S. Department of Labor show that more than 25% of New Yorkers hold union cards, an increase of nearly 1% over 2003. North Carolina picks up at the other end of the spectrum, where only 2.7% of the workers are members in a union. The Labor Department also released pay statistics that show full-time unionized workers on average earn $781 per week, while non-union workers on average earn $612 per week.
Here's today's Dowbod Report. Today's average worker needs to work just 11 hours a week to produce the same standard of living a U.S. worker enjoyed in 1950. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says since 1975, worker productivity has gone up by nearly 70%. A worker today would have to work just 23 hours per week to enjoy the same living standard as the average worker in 1975. If society chose to do it, this huge gain in productivity could mean shorter work weeks, but in the U.S., high productivity has not resulted in shorter work weeks.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Ah, what memories we have of George W.'s lavish inaugural gala. Other presidents have been party poopers and tightwads compared to Bush. Jimmy Carter, for example, provided only peanuts, crackers, cheese, and cash bars for his celebrants. And FDR's inaugural, also held in a time of war, cost only $2,000. Guests enjoyed chicken salad. How tacky. George, on the other hand, strutted his stuff with real class. A $40 million extravaganza with lobster, champagne, nine balls, and boogie-till-you-drop private parties for the lobbyists and moneyed elites. You want class? For $10,000 each, Bush's high rollers could enjoy a delightful inaugural package at the posh Fairmont Hotel, including a beluga caviar and Dom Perignon reception, a chauffeured Rolls Royce, and, you're gonna love this, each couple was assigned two actors posing as Secret Service agents, both wearing black sunglasses and cufflink walkie-talkies. But the little people got to participate, too. For example, your average citizen of Washington, D.C. had a central role, not as celebrants, but as funders. Bush's White House forced the D.C. city government to pony up $17 million to help provide security for George and his well-heeled party bunch. This despite the fact that 91% of Washington residents voted against him in November. Forget those sticks in the mud, though, for this was a capital event, literally. The stars were not merely George and Dick Cheney, but such corporate powers as AT&T, Bank of America, Dell Computers, ExxonMobil, and Home Depot. They chipped in $250,000 each to pay for the splashy show and to buy themselves a spot at the front of the line for the governmental spoils that Bush and company will now dole out. This is Jim Hightower saying, the inaugural is over, but for these corporations, the party has just begun.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Oh, it's such a fascinating day here, I have to tell you. Welcome, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California and Oregon to West Virginia, North Carolina, literally from coast to coast. And all places in between, or many places in between, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, covering all of North America. Probably even part of northern Mexico, I would guess. And beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, American FM on live365.com, and various other places. I know I'm forgetting something, but in any case, welcome to our program. So glad to have you with us. A lot going on today. We're going to, in our second hour, we're going to get into our Tools for Activism course. We're going to talk a little bit about branding. In our first hour is the conservative agenda to get we the people under control. That is to control the message that we receive to totally stage the events. I want to talk about that. They're dropping like flies, by the way. The conservatives, interesting stuff on the new Bush polls. It seems that there's more to do with how the poll was done by the Gallup organization. This is raising some serious questions about, you know, what's up with the Gallup organization. We'll be getting into that. Jeff Gannon's stories, it's going to be an interesting day, friends. I got to tell you, it's just going to be an interesting day. And to start it out, another one bites the dust. Yes, indeed. Another one bites the dust. I got this email from Joel in Pennsylvania. He says, hey, Tom, just won the water cooler war with the ammo you gave me. Dumb right winger dared right down the path of reason that government needs to be smaller. He says he's a hardworking American that made it on his own. I went ahead and used a be-all, end-all explanation that I got off you. I asked him whether or not he went to school, and if it was a public school, he said yes. And I said, well, then you didn't do it on your own now, did you? Use the public system along with the rest of the 98% of America. This is, you know, it's like the day in the life of Joe Republican. I wrote an op-ed piece about this a year or more ago. And it has reappeared in various incarnations all over the internet about, you know, the Joe Republican gets up in the morning and brushes his teeth with water that he knows is pure because the government is making sure that the water standards are pure. And is able to, you know, he flush his toilet and use the drains because know that he's not contaminating the streets because the government is making sure that the septic systems are working and is He lives in a rural area. It was Roosevelt's Rural Electrification Administration that got electricity to his house. Because the power company said, that's not so profitable. We're not going to do that. You just leave it to industry. See, and what happens? Industry says, well, when it's not profitable, we're not going to do it. So in any case, he gets in his car and he drives down the publicly paid for road, stops at the publicly paid for stop sign. He knows that he isn't going to be plowed into by some maniac because he's got a publicly paid for police department out there making sure that as he's gone, he knows that his house won't be broken into because, and if it catches on fire, it'll be protected by the publicly paid for fire department. Goes to work where they get publicly paid for. Publicly paid for, by the way, meaning with our tax dollars. This is an important point. Publicly paid for rights of way, for example, that allow, you know, you say, well, the telephone service is no longer a public utility. Yes, but phone company couldn't work without rights of way, without all those phone poles along the main streets that are paid for and maintained by government. The same for the cable companies. This is why we can say to the cable companies, hey, you have to provide cable access. You have to provide local access. You have to provide C-SPAN. You have to give something back if you're going to use these public resources that we the people, are paying for. And he goes to work in his business or his own business that he's started using a monetary system that is financed by we the people. We pay for the Treasury Department. We pay to maintain a stable currency. Able to enter into contracts that he knows can be enforced in the court system, which is massively more used by corporations and business interests than it is to throw people who stick up 7-Elevens in jail. Even though, of course, all the press goes to, you know, people who get arrested for crimes, the vast majority of the use of our court system in the United States and where the big money is in law is in contract enforcement. And working things out between companies, making sure things. So anyhow, that's paid for by you and me with our tax dollars. If his company is publicly traded, people can invest in it knowing with some reasonable certainty. Obviously, there have been a few anomalies, WorldCom, Enron, whatnot, but some sense of safety that their investments are not scams because we have a publicly paid for Securities and Exchange Commission. I remember Gloria Swanson was an old friend of mine. She was on the board of directors, or on our advisory board, rather, of the New England Salem Children's Village, a home for community for abused kids that Louise and I started back in 1978 and still runs in New Hampshire. It's one of the larger residential treatment facilities now for emotionally disturbed and abused kids in the state of New Hampshire. And Gloria Swanson was on our board. I'd go down to New York every 3 or 4 months, and we'd just have dinner together in her apartment. She had been a vegetarian since 1927, and I was too, or am too, or whatever. And so, it's that liberal stereotype. In any case, so we would make meals for each other and talk. I remember one time her telling me she hated Joe Kennedy. She had dated Joe Kennedy. Joe Kennedy ripped her off, took a good chunk of her life savings. And I remember her telling me how Joe Kennedy, when Franklin Roosevelt created the Security Exchange Commission, he appointed Joe Kennedy to be the head of it. And she said somebody asked him once, why Joe Kennedy? Why would you appoint a crook? You know, this guy, you know, why would you appoint a crook to be the head of the security? And Franklin Roosevelt said, now, this is third hand. I'm sure the exact quote's out there someplace, but this is Gloria telling me this story. She says, Roosevelt said, well, it takes a crook to know a crook. And so that's why I put Joe Kennedy in charge. And she says that Joe Kennedy was very offended by that remark, by the way. But in any case, here we got this publicly funded, all this publicly funded stuff. And people say, well, I did it on my own. And we need to make government smaller. Well, certainly, if any part of government is wasteful and not performing useful services, we should make it smaller. But there are many functions of government, my friends, that we need and that are better done by government than by a for-profit corporation that's going to skim money off the top so that they can pay dividends to stockholders and multi-million dollar salaries to CEOs. It's just that simple. You don't want a private police department enforcing your town where you've got, you know, a big corporate headquarters and a CEO making $2 million a year. And I mean, it makes no sense. So anyhow, Joel says he got this guy. He says, thank you, Tom. I finally made a neocon think you the man. So I sent him back a note saying, thanks, Joel. Isn't it amazing how uninformed these guys are? And he said, and he made just a brilliant point. He replied, he said, I wouldn't say they're uninformed. He says, it's really just plain common sense. He says, I think it's they're too greedy and stupid to stop and think about the consequences of their actions. His thinking was just, give me my tax money. Now, again, I would say, in defense of these folks, that I don't think it's stupid and greedy so much as they've been listening to stupid and greedy. I remember when three years in a row, Bush trying to push through his tax cuts for the rich, and in particular Hannity, but all of these guys on the right who are just, you know, syncopants, who are just repeating the party line for the Republican. It's your money. It's your tax money. You should be able to keep more of it. Well, I'm sorry. It's not your money. It's not my money. Here's how it works, my friends. It's very simple. If we agree to live in this country, and we agree that we are going to make use of the services of the fire department and the police department, and we want a telephone a line coming into our house through public rights of way, and we want to have water that is pure. If we are going to live in this country and we are going to make use of these services, if we ever want to get on an airplane and know that there's an air traffic system keeping it from crashing into other, if we're going to live in this country, we are entering into a social contract. That, by the way, was the title of Jean-Jacques Rousseau's book back in, 1635 or whenever it was, The Social Contract, that opened Men are born free, but everywhere are in chains. It was the beginning of the Enlightenment, the beginning of liberal thinking, the idea that people can govern themselves, that led directly to the American Revolution. You and I live in this country. We have entered into a social contract. And that contract, part of that contract, just like with any other contract, is we're going to pay for services. If I go to the movie, to the theater in town, and I say, hey, you know, I'd like to go see the movie, but, you know, I don't want to pay. It's my money. I earned it. I ought to be able to keep it. You think the guy who runs the movie in town is going to say, okay, good point, I'll let you in. I'll just borrow it from my grandchildren and pay the expenses of the movie. That's what George Bush is doing right now. I mean, that's literally what George Bush is doing right now. No problem. We'll provide you with those services. We'll bill your children and grandchildren. The guy who started this whole thing, who thought up this brilliant idea, Ronald Reagan. George Herbert Walker Bush called it voodoo economics. As Dick Cheney said last year, Ronald Reagan taught us deficits don't matter. Yeah, right. $160 billion we're paying this year in tax money as interest on the money that Ronald Reagan borrowed in the early 80s so that by 84, when he was running for re-election, he could make the economy look good. You give me a $160 billion credit card, I'll show you what it looks like to look like you're living good, especially if I don't have to pay it off. This is the most immoral, insane public policy ever. And in fact, I got some interesting quotes from our senators here in Vermont. We'll get into that in the later on this hour, maybe in the second hour, third hour of the program. Pat Leahy and Jim Jeffords, just some brilliant, brilliant stuff today. Some great comments. So, speaking of, as we go into a break here, speaking of our public schools, which is what allows us to have this, you know, one of the main things that allows us to have the civil society. There's a poetry program here in Vermont. And this is just wonderful stuff. The you know, what kids can do. Here's a poem. Taylor Weed, grade 5, fifth grade girl. It's published in today's paper, the Burlington Free Press. The girl who does not know about herself. Here's the poem. I am like a rock hitting the ground hard. My hair is like the leaves waving through the spring air. My face is like the face on a breezy mountain. I am like a tree growing and growing every day. I am like the snow falling from the sky onto my house. I am like the grass beneath your path in the deep woods. I am like a slave slaying the dragon that lives with the king. It's just remarkable. Another one, Emily Sanders, and the dry grass blowing in the wind. The sun sets slow to where it was going. The roots of the trees settle in its dirt. The fire god waits in the sky. A bird flies by. That's like T.S. Eliot. I mean, we have, what an investment, our children. 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews.
What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time. Uh-oh. All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Got to go back. We got to go back. Got to go back. Got to go back. Got to go back. for the healing.
Speaking of going back, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, this is the Dow Bob report today from the Workers' Independent News Service. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says since 1975, and those of you who are old enough to remember working in 1970, you will know what I'm talking about. Since 1975, worker productivity has gone up by nearly 70%. If workers reaped all the benefits of that productivity, they would have to work just 23 hours per week today to enjoy the same standard of living as the average worker in 1975. Of course, workers aren't getting the benefit of that. Instead, CEO salaries have gone from averaging around 50 times what a worker, average worker makes, to 500 times what the average worker makes. And more people are making their money with their dividend checks and only paying 15% income tax, thanks to Bush's third round of tax cuts, where he not only cut income taxes for the rich, but then said, and if you'll earn your living like most of the Bush family does, sitting around waiting for the dividend checks to arrive from your investments, and the Bush family has for many, many years, then you don't have to pay the full income tax rate like the guy who's out there plowing the road or maintaining the streets. You only pay 15% maximum. Ain't life wonderful if you're rich in America? In Bush world. Well, it would be if it wasn't for the fact that those tax cuts were putting us, our children, and our children's children in debt, putting our nation at risk, putting us at the mercy of the Chinese communists, turning the United States, Ronald Reagan turned the United Nations from the strongest and healthiest, most economically healthy nation in the world to the weakest and most anemic economic nation in the world, in as much as we went from being the world's largest creditor, that is, more countries in the world owed us more money than any other nation, to the world's largest debtor by the time Reagan was done, and we still are. And it was only Bill Clinton who made a dent in that. You will recall. Balanced budgets! Gee, a surplus! What a novel idea! 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. TomHartmann.com, our chat room, our website for the chat room if you want to get to that, and the message board and whatnot. George in Tampa, Florida on the line. Hey, George, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just want to say, I just have a comment. Actually, as far as the public school,
yes, sir.
How many of these Republicans went to college without the benefit of a student loan? I keep thinking about that.
Well, and it's not just student loans. I mean, our colleges, particularly the state universities, are subsidized substantially by
right.
tax dollars. And you know, used to be hugely substantially. I mean, Thomas Jefferson's whole idea for the University of Virginia was that all college should be free for everybody. When I was a kid, California was about the last state where they had free state public education, and a lot of my friends moved out to California just to get free college education. Ronald Reagan put an end to that as governor of California.
Well, this thing is, you know, I have to interject if I can. I mean, you know, this thing as far as Ronald Reagan, I'm sort of an older guy, and I can remember a lot of things that maybe some of the younger people don't. But this thing as far as the budget, as far as the spending, the deficit spending, stuff like that, it's not a mistake. I mean, Ronald Reagan had a clear goal of bankrupting America. I mean, the purpose was if you bankrupt America, that's how he's going to get rid of all these entitlement programs.
That's right. It's called Starve the Beast is the name of the strategy, and that's the inside phrase for the conservatives. You starve the beast. And in the past, we had run up deficits in the United States. In fact, I think we've probably only had about 6 years out of all of the years that we've been a country where we didn't have some small deficit. But usually it's the result of having to fight a war. In fact, almost always, the Civil War, World War I, World War II, substantial deficits. But Reagan's deficit running up and George W. Bush's, as you correctly pointed out, is solely for the purpose of bankrupting the government. So then they can turn around, as Bush just did this week, and say, oh, we can't afford to have these social programs for the poor. We can only have welfare programs for the rich. I'm sorry.
Right.
That's it. No more. That's, you know, end of. Socialism in the United States.
Okay, I just wanted to point out that absolutely is by design. I mean, it's not a stupid mistake.
If I implied that Reagan did that stupidly, my error. No, it was very much by intention. Thank you, George. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. Tom Hartmann here with you. Viagra for your brain.
A party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there? Then the answer is no.
making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
China has made a dramatic reversal in its energy policies. According to British newspaper The Independent, China has slowed or halted the building of 22 major dams and power stations out of concerns over the environmental impact. The Chinese State Environment Protection Agency says that the projects will not continue until a proper assessment of their impact is made. According to the Christian Science Monitor, a growing number of Chinese support tougher policies to protect nature. The move comes just in time for the implementation of the Kyoto Protocol on Wednesday. The United States is one of the few industrialized nations to not sign on to the Kyoto Protocol. The Bush administration cites growing pollution in China and the unwillingness of the Chinese government to intervene in the environment as one of the primary reasons for not joining.
Since Walmart announced last week that it's closing a store in Jonquière, Quebec that went union, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union has been gearing up to challenge the anti-union retail giant. UFCW Canada's Michael Fraser says public sentiment in Quebec is against Walmart's closing of the store because it went union.
There's been a very public reaction to their announcement because the people in Quebec believe that this is unfair. And the only reason that they're putting these people out of work is because of the fact that they exercise their democratic right to join a union.
Fraser says the UFCW will press the workers' case with Quebec's labor board, and that will include filing unfair labor practice charges against Walmart. Fraser vows the UFCW will continue its fight to organize Walmart. Fraser says a public campaign underway protesting Walmart's closing of the union store has taken on a life of its own as Walmart's true anti-worker nature is revealed. The UFCW says this is not about profit, it's about power.
New York State once again has the highest percentage of organized labor in the nation. New numbers from the U.S. Department of Labor show that more than 25% of New Yorkers hold union cards, an increase of nearly 1% over 2003. North Carolina picks up at the other end of the spectrum, where only 2.7% of the workers are members in a union. The Labor Department also released pay statistics that show full-time unionized workers on average earn $781 per week, while non-union workers on average earn $612 per week.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Today's average worker needs to work just 11 hours a week to produce the same standard of living a U.S. worker enjoyed in 1950. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says since 1975, worker productivity has gone up by nearly 70%. A worker today would have to work just 23 hours per week to enjoy the same living standard as the average worker in 1975. If society chose to do it, this huge gain in productivity could mean shorter work weeks, but in the U.S., high productivity has not resulted in shorter work weeks.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
We banged the drum slowly and played the fife lowly. You know the song in my heart. In the turning of twilight, in the shadows of moonlight.
Welcome back. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Tom Hartman here with you. Today's Burlington Free Press. Here, it's not really the local paper. Gannett owns it, one of the largest newspaper corporations in the world. In any case, the local staff writers, Terry Hollenbrook and Aaron Kelly. The front page, big story, Bush's budget bashed. State leaders say cuts will hurt Vermont. This is just the one state. This is just a for example. You know, I happen to live here, but it's a DC here in the People's Republic. And it's just a for example. President Bush's proposed federal budget would slash funds for affordable housing, health care, heating assistance, job training, education, and after-school programs, and the cuts would hurt poor Vermonters the most. Now, as we said, this we have to give these guys credit. This represents a coherent worldview. There is a small group of people. They represent, according to most studies and most polls, they represent somewhere between 6 or 8% of the population and maybe as much as 12 or 15% of the population, but most likely fewer than 10% of the population. There's a small group of people who really and truly believe that plutocracy, aristocracy, sometimes they'll refer to it as a meritocracy, is better than democracy. That you just, as John Adams used to say, you just can't trust the rabble. And then there are those of us who think that, who know. I mean, you look at the experience of this country over 200 years. When we've done it, when we haven't, when we've done it right, and when we fail to do it right, that when you give the people the power to make decisions, that ultimately the right thing happens. But here we've got these so-called conservatives. Well, actually, the genuine conservatives behind these cuts. I mean, they're saying they really believe that it's a slippery slope to communism, so that socialism is. I mean, they really believe that the government should play no role in providing services, by and large, other than a military. We should have a socialist military, they want, and perhaps a socialist police department. There's some places, in some places, they even argue in favor of a privatized fire departments and things. In fact, there are some places in the United States right now that have privatized fire departments. But in any case, Pat Leahy, a senator from Vermont, called Bush's proposal, quote, the most irresponsible budget ever proposed by any administration in our history. I have to agree. The president pro tem of the Senate for the state of Vermont said this is a declaration. It's like a declaration of war against the states. And all across the states, they're agreeing with that. Of course, we have here in this state a Republican governor. The result, by the way, not in this last election. People, I guess, thought he did a fairly decent job. But in the election before, every 2 years, the governor runs for reelection. 4 years ago, Jim Douglas won, because the Greens and the Progressives split the majority of the vote. So he became governor with some 40-some-odd percent of the vote. Anyhow, Jim Douglas, careful not to criticize Bush, said he's, quote, very concerned, end quote, about the proposed budget. It must be tough to be a Republican and be in state government anywhere in the United States right now. Because the Bush administration has Peter Welch, he's right. It's a declaration of war against the states. Jim Jeffords, again. No, that was Pat Leahy I quoted before. Jim Jeffords, the independent senator from Vermont, used to be the Republican. The last Republican I voted for. In 2000, I voted for a Republican. It was Jim Jeffords. And I also voted for a Democrat, Pat Leahy, and I voted for a Green. I voted for, what's his name? I can't say it anymore. I'm sorry. Yes, Ralph Nader. Okay. The Bush, here's with Jim Jeffords. Anyhow, the Bush administration is attempting to balance. I didn't in 2004. In 2004, I voted for John Kerry, but that's a whole other. You know that. In any case, Jim Jeffords. The Bush administration is attempting to balance the budget on the backs of veterans, the working poor, and the environment. The budget represents the wrong priorities and wrong values for this nation. And most of America would agree. However, there is that 6 or 8% of right-wing cranks, and they control the House, the Senate, and the White House right now. So guess what, friends? Batten down the hatches, especially if you work for a living, because we are, more tax cuts for the rich, more debt for our children, more taxes for working people. 1-866-889-8894. Mike in Indianapolis, Indiana on the line. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing today?
I'm great. What's up?
Great. I want to premise my call to say I'm a business owner. I own a small business. And
me too, by the way.
Great. And a lot of these things I think you're right on. For instance, these public services, it's great that the taxpayers, including myself and you, pay for the roads, the police, the military, the clean water and sewer lines and these types of things, the public parks. I agree, there should be a certain amount of taxes paid. However, when I look at my tax bill and I go adding up my state tax and my property tax and my sales tax and everything else I got to pay, my Social Security tax, I'm in the 53% tax bracket. And I think it's absolutely ludicrous that any American ought to be paying a 53% tax. And that's not even counting some of the stuff like, you know, when we go out and we, you know, we get gas and we pay for a gallon of gas and 37 cents on the dollar goes to the federal government. It's just ludicrous.
But and that
you
pays,
guys
that pays
don't want to cut the taxes at all.
That 37 cents, that 37% on your gas tax is paying for the roads that you're driving on, you realize, Mike.
Well, what have
would you rather not have the roads?
Oh, actually, look, I think we ought to have the roads. I think it's a great service. But what I'm saying is, how much is too much?
Well, that's a good question, and I think that's a very legitimate question, and that is what should be the national debate. But the reality is right now that Bush is saying, we're going to, you know, you can have this stuff. Okay, we're going to cut back. We're going to cut back on, for example, preschool programs for kids, Head Start programs for kids, which we know where you invest $200-$300 in a child's, you know, in the first year of a child's life, and you're going to reap thousands of dollars down the road in kids that you don't have to put through the juvenile justice system. I mean, we know that these are reasonable investments. In any case, he's going to say, no, we're going to cut these things. But how can we even have this discussion without acknowledging the fact that we have this $7 trillion debt?
Well, I think you bring up that's another good point, too. Now, for instance, you know, if you take the gross national domestic product and you put it in a percentage form, we're around 3.2%, I think, was the last figure. I would love if in my household, you know, I, for instance, let's say I made $1,000 a month. If I only had to write it or had a credit on $32, I would be absolutely thrilled. I think we all would. And that, you know, it's out of proportion. When they bring up these numbers on the national debt, yeah, dollar figures, you're absolutely correct. It's the biggest it's ever been in history.
You know, Mike, that is one of the biggest con lines. I'm surprised. You sound like a smart guy, and I'm surprised you've fallen for it. The United States government does not own the gross domestic product.
No, they don't.
And so how can
we
you
do.
Say, no, we do not. The gross domestic product is all of the economic activity in the United States. It has nothing to do with the government's budget. No relationship at all. It's not like you're saying. What you're saying is the equivalent of saying, well, the guy next door is a multimillionaire. He's worth, you know, $50 million. I'm worth $100,000. You know, I'll be $90,000 in debt because he's got $150 million in between the two of us. We'll be okay.
Right. But it's our.
See, what I'm saying is it makes no sense. This is a con job, Mike. To say as a percentage of GDP, the government does not control the GDP. The government controls the government's budget, period.
Okay, well, let's
look at our debt as a percentage of the government's budget.
Well, let's say for conversation reasons, you're correct. And let's say I agree with that.
About a third of our budget right now is just debt service. This is nuts.
But I'm going to accept your premise that you're correct, Tom. But even if I do that, percentage-wise, we're still lower than we've ever been, percentage-wise, even under Clinton and Reagan and Bush and Nixon.
Not as a percentage of government spending. No, we are not. We are actually higher, as far as I know, we're higher than we've ever been. I'm pretty sure we are higher than we were during World War II, which was the other peak, and then the previous one was the Civil War. If you look at about a third. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Hang on just a second. I may have. I used to have a thing sticking up here. I don't have it in front of me, but about a third of what you're paying in taxes right now, I believe, well, I'll get the exact number, is in one way or another paying debt service. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, so it's not 3% of what you have you're paying, you know, you owe. It's a third, and more or less. And that is huge. That's absolutely massive. Forget about it as a percentage of GDP. GDP has nothing to do with government unless you want to start out with the premise that government should own a particular percentage of GDP. If you want to say, okay, whatever the GDP is of America, our tax rate is going to be 10% of it forever. Okay. Then we're simply going to tax 10% of all economic activity right across the board. And then if we have 3.5% of GDP is our debt, then we've got, well, then you got a 30% debt. Again, we're back to the same place.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that your original point, that you're paying 50% of your income in taxes, most middle-class Americans, most people in America who are making, you know, over $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 and under $150,000 are paying in that neighborhood when you add it all up. And the same is true of most Europeans. And the question that we have to ask ourselves, Mike, ultimately, is in what type of society do we want to live? I have lived and worked in third world countries in Colombia, in Peru, in Uganda, in India, in China, and in places, India is a good example, where the tax rates are relatively very low. And, you know, there's not a lot of government services. And you walk out of your house in the morning and there's 35 kids out there with leprosy and their hands out and, you know, snot-nosed, infectious, you know, begging for money. Is that the kind of world we want to live in? Is it worth 52% of our income?
Oh, I don't think so. Not at all. I think that.
Okay, then what are you going to cut?
Well, I think this Social Security debate's a real good one. I'm a firm supporter of Social Security. When I grew up, my father had passed away, and my mom lived on that Social Security. But I think that's one area. I've paid in to date somewhere around $144,000. Mm. Now, what's interesting is when I get, you know, 65 or at retirement age, say I live another 10 years, I'll be lucky by that time if I get a 5% return and my kids, all four of them, will get zero. Why can't I take 4 or 8% and make an investment and then pass that on to my kids? I think that's without destroying Social Security for the people that have to have it, like my mom did.
Yeah, well, again, Mike, you know, here's where your question, again, you're asking the question that the Republicans want you to ask. And it has blinded you to the reality of the situation. 28% of Social Security does not go to retired people. Good friend of mine, Michael Hutchison, out in Santa Fe 5 years ago. He's my age. He's in his early 50s. He was out running. He fell off a bridge, broke his neck. He's paralyzed from the neck down. He would give anything to be able to walk. He can't. He's living on Social Security. He was a writer. You're a writer. You can't write. You don't have any income anymore. Michael wrote a whole bunch of very, very, very great books. But in any case, so about a third of all Social Security payments right now that are going out of Social Security are going to orphans, widows of people who have worked, and people like Michael. And so, again, Social Security is not a retirement program. It was never intended to be a retirement program. It's an insurance program. It's a social insurance program against social disaster. Do you want to walk out your front door and see somebody like Michael sitting on one, like in India, where they've, again, in India, great examples, you know, where they've got the kids and literally, you know, legless kids on these little roller boards driving, you know, pushing themselves around the streets with their begging bowls out. Is that the America that you want to live in or not?
Well,
I mean,
if you want
to have a 5 or 6 or 7% return on Social Security instead of the 3 or 4% return that we're getting right now because the trust fund is invested in T-bills, then, you know, cool. You know, get a 401k, get a SEP account, get an IRA, have a private investment program. But if you want to have a program where we're actually going to take care of the most vulnerable and weakest among us so that we don't live in that horrific Charles Dickens world where, you know, debtor's prison and Tiny Tim and all that kind of stuff, then we've got a pretty good system in Social Security. And if we just,
I think it stinks.
Well, and if we just changed, and here's the deal that really grates me, Mike. If you make $90,000 or less, you're carrying the entire load. If you make $90,000, you are paying the exact same number of dollars into Social Security every year in taxes as does Bill Gates. And if you make $30,000, you're paying the same percentage of your income. Well, not the same percentage of your income, but in other words, the first $90,000 of your income is taxed. After that, it's not. Social Security is like, hey, if you're rich, you don't have to pay into it. But if you make $90,000 or less, you get to carry the entire burden. If all he did was eliminate that cap, Mike, we'd have a program that is just fine for the forever. Forever!
Well,
what's wrong with that?
Honestly, I disagree with you totally.
I'm using numbers from the Social Security Administration.
Yeah, I just think it's better if you do it privately.
Well, and I would encourage you to do that. You should have a SEP. You should have a 401k. You should have an IRA. You should have, the government has provided welfare for the middle class in as much as you can set aside money that is tax deferred.
Tom, I got to go, but I appreciate your time.
Yeah, ditto, Mike. Thanks for the call. It's good to raise these things. It really is. And we got to go, too. We've got to take a break here. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Our final quote for the day here. Reducing Medicaid funding nationwide by $45 billion over 10 years eliminates 28 programs. Is this what we want? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. 10 minutes before the hour.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza man.
Hey, you're not the pizza man. You're the cable guy again.
Price patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice cream man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
In some parts of the world, a shortage of protein leads to an abundance of poaching. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. People and wildlife are suffering from severe overfishing in the waters of West Africa. Researchers say the fishery has been depleted as a result of overexploitation, and people can no longer rely on fish to get cheap protein into their diets. People are turning to animal meat as a replacement, and they're getting it by poaching in wildlife reserves. Justin Prechers is a wildlife ecologist at the University of California in Berkeley. He studied the rise and fall of fish populations off the coast of Ghana during the past 30 years. Ghana is on Africa's Atlantic coast, and people there have depended on fish for generations. Prechers says the importance of this fishery stretches from the Atlantic coast to the edge of the Sahara Desert.
It's actually when you get much further inland, in some cases even into sub-desert or desert communities, hundreds, in some cases 1,000 miles from the coast, where you realize that it's these smoked or dried fish, particularly these small sardines and anchovy-type things, that are the primary source of animal protein. And they're the cheapest. They're still, despite the cost of getting these fish transported all the way out to these villages in the middle of nowhere, they're still the cheapest source of animal protein around.
Preshera says this source of protein and economic livelihood is disappearing because of overfishing. He says people all over West Africa are now hunting in game reserves to get protein from meat. His work shows that hunting has been hard on herds of wild animals that include elephants, lions, and leopards. Preshera published his findings last November in the journal Science. He says these problems occur around the world, and we need to find new ways to give people cheap protein that doesn't come from fish or other animals in the wild. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Is this the world we created? We made it on our own. Is this the world we invaded? It's the law, so it seems.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Chile, the country of Chile, some people pronounce it. Weary, this from the Los Angeles Times, Marla Dickerson's article. Weary from decades of working nights and weekends at a public hospital, nursing assistant Inela Pardero Avacedo recently retired, but the 64-year-old plans to look for a part-time job to pad the nest egg of her personal retirement account. The $225 a month she draws under Chile's privatized system doesn't stretch far. And what galls her is the colleagues who stuck with the traditional pension plan, that is, they stayed with normal Social Security, get three times as much as guaranteed for the rest of their lives. She says, quote, about the privatization of Social Security in Chile, quote, the government painted this wonderful picture of private accounts. They fooled me. They fooled us all. The article goes on to say high management fees have trimmed retirees' payouts substantially while big holes remain in Chile's safety net. An estimated half of the nation's workers aren't saving enough to qualify even for a minimum government pension of $134 a month. The transition has been brutal for the first wave of retirees, such as Pardo, many of whom made the change too late in their careers to reap the full benefits of compound interest. Maria Quintila Carvila, 63, government secretary. They promised us gold and riches, she says. Not quite what they delivered. She says she rued the day that she left her government benefit, guaranteed benefit plan. 1-866-889-8894, Kent in Chicago on the line. Hey, Kent.
Hey, Tom, how are you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
My voice doesn't hold it up too well here, so I'm going to try to make this, I'm going to try to keep this simple. I hope your last caller is still listening.
Yeah, well, and we need to keep it short because we've only got about a minute and a half.
Okay, if we all go to a restaurant and we decide we're going to have steak, okay?
Sure.
And we pay for the meal depending on what your salary is. So the person with the highest salary pays a larger percentage of his income towards the meal, and everybody ends up eating steak.
Okay.
If you get a tax cut, Bill Gates, the amount he pays towards a steak comes down. Therefore, the amount your last caller pays goes up. And every time they tell him he's going to get a tax cut, he wonders why he pays more at the state level, and he wonders why he keeps getting the shaft.
Yeah.
So here he is saying he's paying 57%, and it's too much. He wants it down again.
Yeah.
And he's going to end up losing more because he's got kids, he's going to pay for infrastructure, he's going to pay for school buses, fire stations, police departments, and these people don't realize what's happening.
You just can't have it all is the bottom line, Kent.
They don't get it.
You just can't have it all. And thanks for the call, Kent. Well said. And these are legitimate discussions to be having. What kind of nation do we want to live in? What kind of society do we want to live in? And how much longer are we going to allow folks like the Bush administration to lie to us? To lie to us about the plans that they have up their sleeves that are basically just to help out the financial and banking industry. That's the bottom line of this whole privatization thing. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
China has made a dramatic reversal in its energy policies. According to British newspaper The Independent, China has slowed or halted the building of 22 major dams and power stations out of concerns over the environmental impact. The Chinese State Environment Protection Agency says that the projects will not continue until a proper assessment of their impact is made. According to the Christian Science Monitor, a growing number of Chinese support tougher policies to protect nature. The move comes just in time for the implementation of the Kyoto Protocol on Wednesday. The United States is one of the few industrialized nations to not sign on to the Kyoto Protocol. The Bush administration cites growing pollution in China and the unwillingness of the Chinese government to intervene in the environment as one of the primary reasons for not joining.
Since Walmart announced last week that it's closing a store in Jonquière, Quebec that went union, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union has been gearing up to challenge the anti-union retail giant. UFCW Canada's Michael Fraser says public sentiment in Quebec is against Walmart's closing of the store because it went union.
There's been a very public reaction to their announcement because the people in Quebec believe that this is unfair. And the only reason that they're putting these people out of work is because of the fact that they exercise their democratic right to join a union.
Fraser says the UFCW will press the workers' case with Quebec's labor board, and that will include filing unfair labor practice charges against Walmart. Fraser vows the UFCW will continue its fight to organize Walmart. Fraser says a public campaign underway protesting Walmart's closing of the union store has taken on a life of its own as Walmart's true anti-worker nature is revealed. The UFCW says this is not about profit, it's about power.
New York State once again has the highest percentage of organized labor in the nation. New numbers from the U.S. Department of Labor show that more than 25% of New Yorkers hold union cards, an increase of nearly 1% over 2003. North Carolina picks up at the other end of the spectrum, where only 2.7% of the workers are members in a union. The Labor Department also released pay statistics that show full-time unionized workers on average earn $781 per week, while non-union workers on average earn $612 per week.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Today's average worker needs to work just 11 hours a week to produce the same standard of living a U.S. worker enjoyed in 1950. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says since 1975, worker productivity has gone up by nearly 70%. A worker today would have to work just 23 hours per week to enjoy the same living standard as the average worker in 1975. If society chose to do it, this huge gain in productivity could mean shorter work weeks, but in the U.S., high productivity has not resulted in shorter work weeks.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
George W. likes to brag that he's a decisive leader. Well, yes, he is. And he is quite decisively leading our country right over a cliff with his Iraq policy. But Bush is now claiming that the November election has vindicated his war decisions, calling his win an accountability moment. Well, not exactly. In fact, large majorities of Americans are telling pollsters and Bush that they do not support his Iraq adventure. For real accountability, George might want to have a heart-to-heart with Dante Zapala, a Los Angeles teacher. Zapala has written an eloquent op-ed piece about his brother Sherwood, who died last year as a result of Bush's boneheaded decisiveness. Zapala recalls that the president told us that we must invade Iraq because Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction that threatened America's national security. Zapala's brother, a National Guardsman with a wife and 9-year-old son, was assigned to the team in Iraq looking for those non-existent weapons, even though the international inspectors had declared in January 2004 that there were no WMDs. W decisively insisted that they were there, so the search team was ordered to keep looking. 3 months later, Sherwood was killed while standing guard in the futile search for the weapons. Zapala's grieving family wept anew this January when the White House, with no fanfare, conceded that there were no WMDs and officially ended the search. They are anguished not by Sherwood's death alone, but for all who have died and will die because of the false assumptions of our so-called leaders who still will not come clean. Zapala writes, "The war with Iraq was not a mistake, but rather a flagrant abuse of power by our leaders and a case of shameful negligence by the rest of us for letting it happen." This is Jim Hightower saying, there's no accountability moment until Bush and our whole society can honestly answer Zapala's question, why did my brother die?
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac. The libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what. Support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library. So make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
And radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And every time Rush Limbaugh hears that theme music, he ups his medication. Looking around at these numbers, here's the debt numbers. I was running on memory, always a bad thing to do. As of 2 years ago, of the total federal budget, just about 8% of it was interest on the debt. And of the discretionary part of the federal budget, it was nearly 20% interest on the debt. So you want to start cutting. Cut the interest on the debt. How do you do that? Pay down the debt. How do you do that? You balance the budget and you generate surpluses. As Bill Clinton, who, and those of you who know, listen regularly, know I am not a Democrat and I'm not a huge fan of Bill Clinton. I think he sold us out with GATT, NAFTA, and the Telecommunications Act of 1996. But nonetheless, he got us into a positive cash flow. And it's an important thing. And so, anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. And we'll take a couple calls here, and then I want to move along on another topic. John in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. What's up?
Well, I don't know how you make the argument to some people. This fellow that was on before claiming that Social Security needed to be privatized. And when it's explained to him what that all means, and he even admits that his mother needed Social Security, he says, well, it still should be private. And I wonder, you know, how would his mother have survived if it were indeed private then? She obviously didn't have any money. She needed the Social Security payment.
Right. And what happens if you set aside, you know, he said he'd paid in $100,000+. Okay, that's right. Fine. You retire at 65. And by the time you're 70, you've spent that money. What happens if you live till you're 75 or 80?
Exactly.
I mean, this is an insurance program.
I mean, this guy was affected personally. His mother absolutely survived because of this program. He wants it eliminated.
Well, he wants to privatize. See, he's been drinking the right-wing Kool-Aid. I mean, we have to have compassion for folks like that.
Exactly.
And help them understand.
I appreciate your argument, and I agree with it completely.
Yeah, well, thank you for the call, John. I appreciate it. Well said. 1-866-889-8894. Linda in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Linda, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I'm calling because I just want to let you know our mayor in Grand Rapids, George Hartwell, came out last week, and the Grand Rapids Press had an article. Mayor George Hartwell says he's so mad he's ready to take on President Bush.
Is he a Republican?
No, I don't know what he is. It's a nonpartisan position, right, for mayor?
Oh, is it? Is it?
I think so.
It varies from place to place. So.
I think so, but this is nonpartisan because what he's reacting to is Bush's budget cut from federal funding for local programs by 50%.
Oh, it's incredible.
And he says he has to address the deficit he created with massive tax cuts that benefit the wealthiest Americans, and he has to fund a war that is expensive and unpopular. So he targets the poor and the unemployed, and in most cases the minorities, because racism has rendered them the poorest, to shoulder the burden of tax relief and funding for the war.
Yeah.
Well, because the poor are outside our doors, because they're our neighbors, local government is once again holding the bag.
Yep, and local government, see, that it's a whole lot harder because it's in your own community. It's a whole lot harder for local officials to meet you in the, walk by you in the corner diner.
Right.
And, I mean, I hear in Vermont, I'll go down with Louise and I'll have dinner down at Sarducci's, a little restaurant down here in town. And our state senator, Bill Doyle, he's in there. I think he must live there. I mean, it's almost every time we go to dinner there, Bill is there, and he walks around, shakes hands with everybody, and he comes over and he says, "Hey, Tom, saw that article in Common Dreams." He's a Republican, by the way.
Yeah.
He says, "I saw that article in Common Dreams where you're talking about those voting machines. I was shocked, And I said, "Hey, Bill, and we're talking about the issues right here in this state, and it's a whole lot harder for somebody like that to look you in the face and say." Sorry, but we're just not going to fill the potholes this year. We're not going to be able to have science classes in our schools this year.
Yeah.
They can't do it. So, Bush can do it at the federal level, but at the local level, it's a whole lot harder. You make a good point, Linda. Thanks for the call.
Yep.
I appreciate it. Well said. And this is just. And the point that I believe it was Mike made earlier in Indianapolis. About, I'm paying 53% in taxes. Well, here's the interesting thing about that. Again, this sounds like one of those wonderful arguments. That's terrible. 53% of your income is going to taxes. The reality is that there is a marketplace of employment. I mean, it's just a simple reality. Now, there's a good side and a bad side to this. And let me describe the good side first and then put it in a larger context. Let's say there's a national context and an international context. And the national context is that in any country, when you're just looking at that country, if the taxes go up, people have less available money, they are going to demand more money in salaries. And eventually they're going to get them if the wealth of the nation is going to remain the same overall. So if in one era we were paying 20% taxes, we were probably making about 30% less in salary. Now we're paying 50% taxes, so we make more salary. So after the taxes are paid, you're making more money. I mean, there's the same amount of money left over in the ideal world. The reality is that Now you say, but wait a minute. It's how can you say that? Because I'm paying more and more taxes, and America is getting poorer and poorer. Well, actually, it's kind of the opposite. Right now, tax revenue to the United States government, as a percentage of both government budget and GDP, is the lowest it's been, with two exceptions in the history of this country. One being 1929. The year just before the Great Crash, and the other being, actually, I shouldn't say the history of this country, in the last 150 years. And the second being, for one brief little moment of time, in, as I recall, 1984, 83 or 84, where Reagan had jammed it way, way down. And then, of course, Reagan had to raise taxes 5 out of the last 8 years of his presidency. This is the last 5 years, every year he had to raise taxes. Because he was creating a disaster. And even in the Reagan administration, they could see that this was a disaster that's coming. But in any case, so you say, okay, if I'm paying more in taxes, maybe that's why we're becoming poorer. But the reality is that when Reagan came into office, the top marginal tax rate was 70%. And right now it's like 36%. So we have seen tax cuts. And yet, since Reagan came into office, the middle class has become poorer. As I mentioned in the last hour, if the amount of cash that is being generated on a per worker basis was staying with the workers rather than all going all the way up to the CEOs, and the CEOs were still making their 30, 50, whatever times, if CEO pay and worker pay had remained relatively equal in proportion, then productivity has gone up so much that today, to have a 1975 standard of living, a person would only have to work 23 hours. Now, here's where it gets a little more confusing, and that is, you say, okay, as a nation, we want to have a high level of security. And there are conservatives who would say the flip side of that is a low level of freedom, right? You're forced to pay into Social Security. And there's truth to that. And these are the legitimate debates to have in a democratic society. How much security do we want versus how much economic freedom do we want? We're not talking about freedom of speech here. But, yes, you have to pay for those roads if you want to use them. But let's say that you have a country that wants to have a very, very, very heavy social system where all health care is paid for, all retirement is paid for, rest homes, retirement homes are high class, high quality place. Sweden is such a country, for example. And so people are paying 70% of their income in taxes. But two things happen. One is that they're taking that much more back out in services. Okay, I'm paying 53% of my income in taxes. Let's say, for example, to use what's-his-name's numbers. Then I'm getting that much more in services, presumably. I mean, hopefully, it would mean that my schools are running better. We're getting a better educated workforce. We're being more successful. Now, the fly in the ointment, of course, is that George W. has been squandering that money with his war in Iraq and whatnot. Now, the other part of it is that if you suspend the laws that countries have had for thousands of years. I mean, you can track this going back to the Roman Empire. That countries have had for thousands of years that encourage or force business people to do business within the nation in a way that first benefits their own nation. Again, laws that Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing. And that Bill Clinton as well stopped enforcing, and that George W. Bush is just kicking the doors wide open. And you create this brave new world of George Herbert Walker Bush, where it's all one world. Now you have a problem where those countries that have relatively high social safety nets, where we the people have decided we collectively want to have a high quality of life. Businesses are forcing us to compete in the labor market against people who don't have a high quality of social safety net. And so you have two choices. You can lower your standard of living. You can lower your social safety net, or both. Actually, three choices. And we're doing both is what's happening in the United States right now as a result of NAFTA and GATT and the insane, absolutely insane trade policies of this country. That began again with Ronald Reagan, with this whole idea, these conservative trade policies, and here we are. Yarmala in Eureka, California, is on the line. Hey, Yarmala.
Good morning, Tom. Talking about Social Security, mm-hmm. I would like to remind one very important thing.
Yes.
To people who want to privatize Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, I used to hear frequently, several times a day, ad on the radio pushing, I forgot what company it was, but it was about pushing people to invest or encouraging people to invest money in a stock market.
Right.
But it was, there was always disclaimer on end of it.
Yes.
And they said, remember to invest only the money you can afford to lose.
There you go. There you go. Well said. Well said. Very well said. And that's the problem also. I mean, I'm all in favor of people putting aside money for their old age. I mean, you know, as an investment. And I think it's marvelous that the government provides us with tax breaks to do it, you know, and tax incentives to do it. But that's not a social insurance program. That's a retirement program. And that's the important point. Yarmila, thank you. If I'm pronouncing your name right, I hope.
Yes.
Thank you so much for your call. Great to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where being progressive never felt so good.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show absolutely without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
A party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there? Then the answer is no.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. If you'd like to help bring the Tom Hartman program to a radio station in your area, please let us know. We have tools to help you make that happen. For more information, go to www.tomhartman.com and click on the Bring Tom Show to Your Town link on the left side of the page. Thanks for your help in bringing uncommon sense from the radical middle to your community.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor.
Palisex books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans.
And welcome back.
Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained. And rode us all the way into New Orleans.
It's the Tom Hartman program where liberals fiendishly plot for total world domination. Or at least a decent life in a decent country with a reasonable standard of living, eh?
We sang every song that Javi knew.
Yes. Welcome back. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, tomhartman.com, the website. Victoria Jones is with us from the Talk Radio News Service with our daily report from Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria, what's up?
Well, I just attended Scott McClellan's White House briefing, and he told us that the U.S. ambassador to Syria, Margaret Scobie, has been recalled. As you know, tensions are going up after the assassination of former Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri in Lebanon.
Yeah.
And even though the White House has been very careful not to say that Syria is involved, clearly there is concern. She delivered a very sort of strong note to the Syrian government before she left. She's coming back for consultations with the U.S. Meantime, the U.S. is also in consultation with our friends at the Security Council.
Interesting. I mean, that was next on the Bushies' wish list, the neocons' wish list, the PNAC wish list was, you know, Iraq, Syria, Iran. That was the order. And looks like it might be happening.
Somebody asked the question whether, with Syria being so naughty, whether it should now be not a quadrangle, but whatever the quad thing is, rather than Axis of Evil, and Scott McClellan declined to go down that route.
Was the issue raised about Scott McClellan's hanging out in gay bars in Texas that's all over the blogosphere now? We've got Ken Melman, the head of the RNC, who has been outed as being gay by one of the gay groups you've got now.
No, there was nothing added about
raised.
That.
Oh, interesting. It's all over the web about Scotty and his relation with Jeffy. That wasn't discussed?
No, it wasn't discussed. There really haven't been any questions about Jeff Gannon for the next day or so. I have to tell you that there is a pall over the White House. I think a lot of people are afraid that, not even necessarily afraid, they're just concerned that things in their personal lives are going to come out if they ask the wrong question that some blogger doesn't like. Yeah. I know that there's a great deal more to the Jeff Gannon story than that, but it has a very chilling influence on the way people think about asking their questions.
Interesting. But I mean, here you have these folks who have virtually made a career out of trashing people who are gay, and it turns out that they themselves. I mean, Jeff Gannon, his they've dug out his sites now, you know, and he was offering escort services with pictures of him totally naked, saying, "I'll be your bodyguard" and stuff like that.
I've heard this. I have not seen any of the pictures.
I saw them this morning. Yes, indeed. They are all out there for the world to see. All, you know, BuzzFlash.com, I think, has links to all of them.
And I think one of the things that to me is very interesting about this is that, you know, that there's no defense. I mean, it really is fairly 17th century. Whether or not somebody's done something or not, it moves so fast now that you're gone.
But see, what gets me is here you've got these guys, you've got a bunch of folks, McClellan, Gannon, whatever his, I forget his real name, and Ken Melman and whatnot, who are building their careers on homophobia, and they have this in their lives. There's this there's a sex scandal exploding or brewing inside the White House and the Republican National Committee. Bill Clinton gets a BJ in the White House, and it's impeachment time. But nobody's talking about the fact that Gannon had the memo about Valerie Plame that you know, what George Herbert Walker Bush called treason, that he apparently got it from Scotty, apparently because of his relationship with Scotty. You know, nobody is talking. It's like Fox News. Oh, no sex scandal in the White House, in this White House. And it's just, you know, whether it's a gay sex scandal or not, I mean, here's a sex scandal, and
there's certainly sex.
Nobody wants to talk about it. I find it very, very interesting. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Well, thank you, Victoria. Let us hope that the situation in Syria calms down. I would hate to see another war. We're having trouble enough as it is with the one we already have. I appreciate the call. Victoria DeJones, the Talk Radio News Service.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
China has made a dramatic reversal in its energy policies. According to British newspaper The Independent, China has slowed or halted the building of 22 major dams and power stations out of concerns over the environmental impact. The Chinese State Environment Protection Agency says that the projects will not continue until a proper assessment of their impact is made. According to the Christian Science Monitor, a growing number of Chinese support tougher policies to protect nature. The move comes just in time for the implementation of the Kyoto Protocol on Wednesday. The United States is one of the few industrialized nations to not sign on to the Kyoto Protocol. The Bush administration cites growing pollution in China and the unwillingness of the Chinese government to intervene in the environment as one of the primary reasons for not joining.
Since Walmart announced last week that it's closing a store in Jean-Pierre, Quebec that went union, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union has been gearing up to challenge the anti-union retail giant. UFCW Canada's Michael Fraser says public sentiment in Quebec is against Walmart's closing of the store because it went union.
There's been a very public reaction to their announcement because the people in Quebec believe that this is unfair. And the only reason that they're putting these people out of work is because of the fact that they exercise their democratic right to join a union.
Fraser says the UFCW will press the workers' case with Quebec's labor board, and that will include filing unfair labor practice charges against Walmart. Fraser vows the UFCW will continue its fight to organize Walmart. Fraser says a public campaign underway protesting Walmart's closing of the union store has taken on a life of its own as Walmart's true anti-worker nature is revealed. The UFCW says this is not about profit, it's about power.
New York State once again has the highest percentage of organized labor in the nation. New numbers from the U.S. Department of Labor show that more than 25% of New Yorkers hold union cards, an increase of nearly 1% over 2003. North Carolina picks up at the other end of the spectrum, where only 2.7% of the workers are members in a union. The Labor Department also released pay statistics that show full-time unionized workers on average earn $781 per week, while non-union workers on average earn $612 per week.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Today's average worker needs to work just 11 hours a week to produce the same standard of living a U.S. worker enjoyed in 1950. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says since 1975, worker productivity has gone up by nearly 70%. A worker today would have to work just 23 hours per week to enjoy the same living standard as the average worker in 1975. If society chose to do it, this huge gain in productivity could mean shorter work weeks, but in the U.S., high productivity has not resulted in shorter work weeks.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Little boxes on the hillside, little boxes made of ticky-tacky, little boxes, all the same. There's a green one and a pink one and a blue one and a yellow one, and they're all made out of ticky-tacky and they all look just the same.
Ah, Bush World. We're going to talk about asserting your brand. What about branding? Tools for activism here in just a moment. First, Elaine in Humboldt County has been patiently waiting on the phone. Hey, Elaine, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Social Security, number one. Doesn't anyone remember what happened in 1929 to the investment?
I think most people don't. That's the problem. We are not teaching history in our schools.
There is no guarantee that anything would be there for anybody.
Oh, in fact, the Christian Science Monitor did a really, there was a very interesting analysis that they did that I reported on this program a couple of weeks ago, where this fellow had retired in 2002 or 2003, and he had put in 40-some-odd years in the workforce, and he added up, he went back year by year and added up how much money he put into Social Security, and then compared each one of those years, if he had put the exact same amount of money into a mutual fund that was invested in either the Standard & Poor's or the Dow 500 or whatever, you know, the basket of stocks. In other words,
right,
the entire stock market. And had he done that, and this is without any management fees, right? This is without Wall Street taking their cut. Had he done that when he retired in either 2002 or 2003, he would have been ahead with Social Security. Why? Because the market was down. Do we want to be in a situation where with the year that we retire is going to have to be determined by whether the market is up or down? I don't think so.
Well, and I don't think the government should have the ability to reach in and take what they want out of the Social Security fund. I think it should have been in a lockbox.
Yeah, yeah. Al Gore was right.
Yeah.
And
I have one other thing.
Sure.
In regard to the Bush administration, and I mean the whole administration plus him, I'm getting to where when I think of them, I think of them as a mafia godfather.
Yeah.
Along with Hitler, what Hitler did to the people in the early 30s. People ought to look up history and read.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
And well, the anniversary is coming, Elaine, and I'll be reprinting the piece that I did a couple of years ago called When Democracy Failed about that. I believe it's the 23rd of February is the day that in 1933 that the Reichstagsgebäude was burned by Marius von der Lubbe.
Mm-hmm.
And Hitler stood in front of it with a microphone, and he called the media together and stood in front of the smoldering building and called it a sign from God and declared a war on terrorism. And within a month, he had passed the laws for the protection of patriotic Germans, which allowed them to wiretap telephones, to open people's mail. It was basically the Patriot Act of 1933.
Great.
And within a year, he was in, you know, into a war. I mean, it was just, you know, the invading, of course, Austria, you know, taking and then the Sudetenland and on it went. I mean, the parallels
right.
are striking, although you also have to be a little careful because Hitler was, you know, not only was he a fascist and not only did he use the same tools that Bush is using, but he was also a mass murderer and, you know, within his own country. And Bush has not gone that far. And I don't expect him to. But the
no,
parallels
but
about the rise of power.
He's got blood on his hands, same as bin Laden.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you.
It's terrible, and we haven't seen anything yet.
Yeah.
So,
and
thank you.
Thank you, Elaine. I appreciate the call. In fact, somebody in our chat room said, okay, it's my money. Give me back my portion of the war in Iraq, and I'll invest it in the stock market. You can just have your war, George. Yeah. Well, here, talking about branding. In marketing and advertising, see, well, let me start at the beginning here. Here's where the Republicans and the Democrats have differed over the last 20 years or so. And there was, and that is that the Republicans have been using this masterfully as an art form, whereas the Democrats have been missing the boat. Now, it's kind of funny because it was Woodrow Wilson back in the 19-teens who was the first president to really effectively and intentionally use mass media public relations to market our involvement in World War One. But the Democrats seem to have forgotten how to do that, progressives and whatnot. And the Republicans have gotten very, very good at it. And they've taken it up through the third level. Now, what are these three levels? There are whenever you want to promote something, whenever you want to sell something, whenever you want to convince people that, you know, they need to buy your product or they need to join your cause or, you know, whatever it may be, there are three pieces to it. The first piece is what is referred to in marketing parlance as the features. Now, let me take this out of politics for a moment so that you can get it in a very abstract way. Let's say we're talking about a widget. And you say, okay, I got this widget. The old widget was a 16-digit widget. This widget has 32 digits. It's a 32-digit widget, twice as many digits as the old widget. And that's a feature, twice as many digits. The second step, before I get to that. So the problem with that feature, with just looking at that feature, is that people say, so what? So it's got twice as many digits. Why should it matter to me? Why should I care? So what? Twice as many digits. Because features without a larger context are irrelevant. On the other hand, what if I came along to you and I said, now you don't know that my widget has twice as many digits now. Yeah, starting the conversation all over again from scratch, came along and I said, hey, we've got this new widget. And with this widget, you can widget twice as fast as you could with your old widget. In fact, you can get so much widgeting done, you'll be able to go home every day at 3 o'clock and take Fridays off. That's a benefit. That's the second step of benefit. Benefits are the what's in it for me. And you may say, oh, come on, I've been widgeting for years. I know how fast my widget can widget. I know how fast I can widget on this widget. I don't believe you. What are you talking about? You leave work every day at 3 and take Fridays off. I don't believe. It's not possible. Because benefit statements without features lack credibility. So now we combine the two. Now I come to you and I say, I've got a 32-digit widget because it's got twice as many widgets as the old widget, the old 16-digit widget. It widgets twice as fast. You get, you know, and therefore you can get your widgeting done in half the time. And a lot of our customers have been able to get all their work done by 3 and even take Fridays off. And now my features are establishing credibility for my benefit statement, and my benefits are establishing relevance for the features. Got that? So, for example, with the political campaign, Bush is trying to roll out his Social Security thing, and he hasn't yet talked about the features. In fact, they're secret. He's only talking about the benefits. And I think it's one of the reasons why there's so little credibility, so few people believe him, is because he's only talking about the benefits. He's saying this will allow people to have more money in their old age, basically. I mean, that's basically the message. And this will avoid a disaster. And when he tries to talk about the features, about the disaster anyway, that the Social Security is headed for a train wreck, turns out that they're wrong. And he's been outed as not being a truth teller. But in any case, he hasn't yet combined the two, and I suspect that he's not going to be able to successfully do that. But that's a whole other discussion. But the same thing with the war in Iraq, when they marketed the war in Iraq. The feature was Saddam has weapons of mass destruction. The benefit was, and he's tied into Al-Qaeda. The benefit was, if we take him out, we'll be safe. You have to have both. Now here's where it gets to the third level. This is where it gets even deeper than just features and benefits, because the features and benefits, this is like advertising 101. But the third level, the deepest level, or the highest level, depending on what metaphor you want to use, is one of identity, branding. See, if the features question is what is it that this program or product is, and the benefits question is, what's in it for me in this program or product? Then the third question The identity question, the branding question is, who am I when I use this service, this feature, this product, this program? Who am I in this context? And this is what the cons have done absolutely brilliantly. Starting about 20 years ago, they started not only branding the word conservative as meaning something noble and positive, but they also started branding the word liberal as meaning something negative and terrible. Much the same way as, to use Elaine's example, much the same way as Hitler did when he started branding the Jews on the one hand, and communists and socialists and trade unionists, but particularly the Jews in Germany. And on the other hand, started attaching a positive brand to what he called National Socialism. So the who am I when I do this? This is the question that must be answered. And this is where the Democrats, the progressives, the liberals have, up to this point, failed to effectively establish that brand identity. You know, when somebody, you know, Marlboro, for example, they don't say, hey, it's great tobacco. You know, it's got 27 different chemicals in it. You know, they don't talk about the features. They don't even talk so much about the benefits anymore. I mean, it used to be, when I was a kid, I remember tobacco advertising. I remember seeing Ronald Reagan on TV wearing a white jacket, you know, playing a doctor and saying, Pall Malls, if you have sore throat, smoke Pall Malls. They soothe your throat, or words to those effects. Back when Ronald Reagan was a paid, you know, TV ad guy, and I was a little kid. And so they were selling features and benefits. And then the tobacco companies got smart. And they said, you know, there's really not much benefit to smoking. And there's no real features. But we can create identity. So, and where the, when this first roll, the two big rollouts on this were the Marlboro Man and You've Come a Long Way, Baby. And what conservatives have done successfully is they have established this sense of identity. And what happens is, when you have a sense of identity, oh, this is my tribe, I'm a member of this tribe, then what happens is there's a filtering process. A filter fits over consciousness. And we start looking for information, listening for information, trying to get a sense of information that will validate our worldview, because it's our identity now. And we start discarding information that doesn't validate our worldview. It's why in the last hour, when I was having that conversation with Mike in Indianapolis, and I would point out facts to him, and he would say, yeah, basically, don't confuse me with the facts. Why? Because his sense of identity was being challenged. This is one of the reasons it's so difficult to argue politics or religion with people, or for that matter, to discuss things like, you know, family. You know, the old jokes about, you know, talking about your mother-in-law kind of thing. I mean, because that's identity. That's who I am. This is my family. This is my church, my synagogue. These are my people. This is my, you know, that there's that sense. And what the Republicans have done is they have created a strong sense of, this is my political party. And the Democrats have not. At least in the last 15, 20 years, they have not. And I would say to a large extent they have not, because of the DLC policies that Bill Clinton pioneered of getting in bed with corporations and leaving behind the traditional Democratic constituency, which was the average working guy and gal. And, you know, you could argue, probably correctly, that in the 80s, and even in the early 90s, that's basically, if the Democrats wanted to survive, what they had to do, because the Republicans had figured out how to get all this money from corporations, and that's where the money was. And ever since Ronald Reagan declared war on organized labor, we went from a 25% of the American workforce being unionized. And so they were, you know, and the unions had political power and they had money that they could give to politicians. They could participate in political campaigns. Down to now where the unionization is very low. It's 8-9% of the private workforce. This not only is a tragedy for the average working person in America, but it also was an erosion of the base of financial support for the Democratic Party. So Clinton and these guys came along and they said, well, let's go to the corporations and say, hey, we'll cut a deal with you. You know, we'll sell our souls to the devil. We'll be a little more corporate friendly. We're going to still talk about social justice, and we're still going to talk about the forests and the trees and things and the environment. And you may not like what we do all the time, but give us some of your money, okay? And some corporations went along. But increasingly now, over the last 6-8 years, you're finding corporations that are simply contributing 100% of their money to the Republicans, period. Just doing it because they know that that's the side that their bread is buttered on. So the Democrats, progressives, and liberals need to be building a sense of tribe. And that sense of tribe needs to be grounded in the features and benefits of we want to live in a world that is safe. We want to live in a world that is compassionate, that is understanding, that is educated, that is insightful. And this is our tribe. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555. And mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
America's attitude toward nuclear power is worlds away from that of some other countries. I'm Steve Pompa for Earthwatch Radio. Switzerland and Japan generate nearly 40% of their electricity from nuclear reactors. And last year, China announced plans to build 30 nuclear power plants in coming years. By comparison, the United States has virtually halted nuclear construction, relying on the technology for only 20% of its electricity. Michael Corradini is a nuclear engineer at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says many countries have turned toward nuclear energy because they have fewer resources than the United States does.
The international scene very much depends on that country's ability to get energy indigenous to its borders.
Corradini says Japan is an example. It has no energy resources such as coal or oil. Corradini says nuclear power also gives heavily populated developing countries a way to improve.
The most interesting thing are the developing nations, where they're trying to move up in economic status and standard of living. China's an example, Korea's an example. And in all those cases, you see that nuclear power is really considered to be one, not the only, but one of the ways to do it.
Corradini contends that more nuclear power would help the U.S. cut its reliance on coal and natural gas, but the failure to effectively deal with nuclear waste is the main factor weighing against the technology.
If we continue to simply store it and not deal with it, it is not really addressing the thing that many people worry about, which is you produce waste in the form of spent fuel. Are you starting to do something with it?
Japan, France, and other countries reprocess nuclear waste as a way to reduce it. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
15, there's still time for you. Time to buy and time to lose.
You see, LBJ, for all his failures and faults in Vietnam, with the Great Society program, understood branding. We are going to follow the precepts of traditional Christianity and Judaism. We are going to care for the least among us. Martin Luther King understood branding. Franklin Roosevelt understood branding. Whether it was the Great Society, Civil Rights Movement, the New Deal, Teddy Roosevelt understood branding. He called it the Square Deal. Thomas Jefferson understood branding. He called it the United States of America. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Jim in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Privilege to talk to you.
Thank
and
you.
I think you've had some good points here, but I keep coming back to one question.
Yes, sir.
Despite all of what you say about what the Democrats need to do, the Democrats won in 04. The Democrats won in 00.
Yeah, in other words, the machines were rigged or the elections were rigged or
Yeah, these are all good talking points, and yeah, everybody needs to use those kind of
things. Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with you at
but
all.
But the Democrats... How can you say they did something wrong? They did something right.
I didn't preface any of this by saying that, well, actually I did. I said the Democrats have not succeeded in establishing a brand, and I'll stand by that. I think that so many Americans agree with the basic features of the Democratic platform broadly. You know, they believe we should have Social Security. They believe that we should have nationally funded medical, Medicare.
But they haven't
established a good brand. And I think Howard Dean gets it. I think he's going to do that. Jim, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. Good point. Ted in Grand Rapids on the line. Hey, Ted, what's up?
Tom, I enjoy your show a lot, and I really enjoyed your conversation with that guy about Social Security. And the Republicans are so good at this bait and switch and this emphasizing the ownership society that they don't tell people that with all that money you're going to collect when you're 65, if you make an ordinary wage, you're going to have to buy an annuity that pays you for the rest of your life and that your heirs cannot inherit.
Yeah, well, essentially what they're talking about is creating an annuity. It's not people think that when they retire, they're going to get this pile of money. And that's not what the Republicans are talking about. This is, again, we haven't seen the details. We haven't seen the features of the program. We just heard the benefits of it.
Yeah, but, it's a you know, shadow performance.
Yeah,
here, you know?
Yeah. But it's the more we hear about it, the more it sounds like what they're really talking about is sort of an annuity. Anyway,
well, you make out if you have a good wage, you don't have to buy as big.
Well,
an annuity
of course, of course, of course. If you're wealthy, you make out in Bush World. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Ted, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. Tom Hartman here with you in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire. No passes required. No loyalty oaths. Just the truth.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
China has made a dramatic reversal in its energy policies. According to British newspaper The Independent, China has slowed or halted the building of 22 major dams and power stations out of concerns over the environmental impact. The Chinese State Environment Protection Agency says that the projects will not continue until a proper assessment of their impact is made. According to the Christian Science Monitor, a growing number of Chinese support tougher policies to protect nature. The move comes just in time for the implementation of the Kyoto Protocol on Wednesday. The United States is one of the few industrialized nations to not sign on to the Kyoto Protocol. The Bush administration cites growing pollution in China and the unwillingness of the Chinese government to intervene in the environment as one of the primary reasons for not joining.
Since Walmart announced last week that it's closing a store in Jonquière, Quebec that went union, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union has been gearing up to challenge the anti-union retail giant. UFCW Canada's Michael Fraser says public sentiment in Quebec is against Walmart's closing of the store because it went union.
There's been a very public reaction to their announcement because the people in Quebec believe that this is unfair. And the only reason that they're putting these people out of work is because of the fact that they exercise their democratic right to join a union.
Fraser says the UFCW will press the workers' case with Quebec's labor board, and that will include filing unfair labor practice charges against Walmart. Fraser vows the UFCW will continue its fight to organize Walmart. Fraser says a public campaign underway protesting Walmart's closing of the union store has taken on a life of its own as Walmart's true anti-worker nature is revealed. The UFCW says this is not about profit, it's about power.
New York State once again has the highest percentage of organized labor in the nation. New numbers from the U.S. Department of Labor show that more than 25% of New Yorkers hold union cards, an increase of nearly 1% over 2003. North Carolina picks up at the other end of the spectrum, where only 2.7% of the workers are members in a union. The Labor Department also released pay statistics that show full-time unionized workers on average earn $781 per week, while non-union workers on average earn $612 per week.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Today's average worker needs to work just 11 hours a week to produce the same standard of living a U.S. worker enjoyed in 1950. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says since 1975, worker productivity has gone up by nearly 70%. A worker today would have to work just 23 hours per week to enjoy the same living standard as the average worker in 1975. If society chose to do it, this huge gain in productivity could mean shorter work weeks, but in the U.S., high productivity has not resulted in shorter work weeks.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The media payola scandal keeps growing. First, it was Armstrong Williams, the right-wing commentator who got caught taking $240,000 from the Department of Education to shill for Bush's No Child Left Behind education law. Just a bad apple, said the powers that be, an aberration in an otherwise honest system. But now comes news that Maggie Gallagher, another right-wing commentator, has pocketed some $40,000 from the government to shill for Bush's strengthening marriage program. Both Williams and Gallagher have been roundly castigated for so crassly thumbing their noses at journalistic ethics. But wait a minute. It takes two to play the payola game, the corruptors as well as the corruptees. What we have here is Bush and company routinely and cynically using your and my tax dollars to use the media to propagandize you and me. Where's the accountability for these corruptors? Which agency officials are diverting our tax funds into propaganda? Which Bush operative devised this system? And why aren't all of these Bushites being publicly castigated and fired? George now says his government will no longer pay journalists. Thanks for small favors, but that's only a tiny piece of the Bushite propaganda machine. Even more corrupt is their surreptitious deployment of VNRs, video news releases, which are prepackaged news stories prepared by Bush officials to praise his policies. These ready-to-air pieces are narrated by actors posing as reporters. They are broadcast on hundreds of TV stations, reaching millions of households. You've seen them on your local TV news, but you wouldn't know it, because they never mention that these reports come from the government itself. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop Bush's covert propaganda program, call the Center for Media and Democracy, 608-260-9713.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, we're at it again. Oh, news. The phone news service of billionaire Rupert Murdoch's private Republican right-wing spin machine, run by former, put together actually by former Reagan operative Roger Ailes. Faux News and former Reagan administration official William J. Bennett and Brett Hume. I mean, you think that the whole thing with Dan Rather using documents that still to this day have not been proven to be forged, but let's assume that they were. Still, everything in his story was solid. Bush did use family influence to get into the Texas Air National Guard. He did get out early. He didn't show up for service. All that stuff was true. The source of the documents is in question. Okay, so And you think that that's a scandal? Okay. Well, let's say that it is. Let's say that that's just, you know, somebody telling us in a news report that something is so is a big deal. Particularly if it's going to affect our lives. Like, say, Social Security. MediaMatters.org. In an attempt to promote President Bush's plan to partially privatize Social Security, nationally syndicated radio host and former Reagan administration official William J. Bennett and Fox News managing editor and anchor Britt Hume falsely claimed that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt advocated replacing Social Security with private accounts. You get it? They are making this stuff up. Welcome back to the program, by the way. Tom Hartman here with you. In fact, notes Media Matters, while Roosevelt advocated, quote, voluntary contributory annuities, end quote, to supplement guaranteed Social Security benefits, he never proposed replacing those benefits with private accounts. In other words, what FDR did say was, you know, we're going to put together this social safety net. We're going to put together an insurance program called Social Security. I think it would be a marvelous thing if people also saved for their old age. On a voluntary basis. Social Security is involuntary. You must contribute to it. On the February 3rd edition of Fox News' Hannity and Combs, William Bennett, the man who claims to be the arbiter of all things moral, said, and I quote,
Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the guy who established Social Security, said that it would be good to have it replaced by private investment over time. Private investment would be the way to really carry this thing through.
End quote. Earlier that evening on Fox News' special report with Britt Hume, Hume provided the following historical basis for Bennett's claim. Hume,
in a written statement to Congress in 1935, Roosevelt said that any Social Security plan should include, quote, voluntary contributory annuities, which by individual initiative can increase the original amounts, annual amounts received in old age, end quote, adding that government funding, quote, ought to be ultimately supplanted by self-supporting annuity plans, end quote.
But, no, it's Media Matter. Media Matters. Roosevelt was not advocating that the present system of guaranteed Social Security benefits ought to be ultimately supplanted by self-supporting annuity plans. He never said any such thing. Rather, he was proposing that both mandatory contributions and voluntary annuities would eventually eliminate the need for a different fund, which was established to provide pension benefits to Americans who were already too old in 1935 to contribute payroll pack taxes to the Social Security system. As he was talking about, they were building this thing from the ground up. Roosevelt outlined three major tenets he envisioned for this. So this was a January 17, 1935 speech. You know, there's a lot more detail here than you need. Here's the bottom line. FDR never, ever, in his wildest imaginations, suggested or would have suggested that the mandatory participation in Social Security should include private investment accounts put in the stock market. No rational politician in the 1930s ever would have said such a thing. If they had, they would have been ridden out of town on a rail. The stock market had just crashed. And here you got Bill Bennett and Britt Hume sitting around going, oh yeah, Roosevelt thought it was a good idea to put your money in the stock market. Give me a break. Dan Rather, that was a scandal. Here we've got a nationally syndicated radio talk show host, and you've got the senior editor, their managing editor, and news anchor for Fox News. spreading this nonsense. As MediaMatters.org notes, former Social Security Associate Commissioner James Roosevelt Jr., Roosevelt's grandson, noted in a January 31st Boston Globe op-ed piece, quote, "The implication that FDR would support privatization of America's greatest national program is an attempt to deceive the American people and an outrage." Well, it's not just, apparently, it's not just Brett Hume and Bill Bennett on Fox News. Here now we find USA Today rewriting George Bush to make him more palatable. I kid you not. USA Today. FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, FAIR.org is their website, on the 7th of February, sent out an action alert noting that USA Today was rewriting George W. Bush's own words. I mean, the words coming out of his mouth. They were rewriting them to take things that he was saying that were inaccurate and lies and make them seem accurate or rational. To quote from the FAIR press release, Bush has said a number of times that the system will be, quote, flat bust, exhausted, and bankrupt, end quote, in the year 2042. In describing Bush's position, USA Today changed those misleading claims, reporting that Bush has said that Social Security, quote, won't have enough money to pay promised benefits in 2042, end quote. They took Bush's lies and made up a truthful statement and attributed it to him. USA Today. USA Today went on to say, quote, Bush says that in 2042, it won't be able to pay 100% of guaranteed benefits, end quote. But in fact, Bush had said, flat bust, exhausted, and bankrupt. As FAIR argued, USA Today effectively changed Bush's inaccurate claims into more accurate, though still debatable, ones. On February 10th, the plot thickens here, my friend. The plot thickens. On February 10th, USA Today's deputy managing editor for news, Owen Ullman, sends a letter to FAIR. Thank you for your interest in USA Today's coverage of President Bush's comments about Social Security. And here's where it gets really interesting. The word bankrupt, this is from the letter from the deputy managing editor for news of USA Today newspaper, Owen Ullman. The word bankrupt can refer to a situation in which obligations exceed revenue, a problem the Social Security system faces in about 15 years. In addition, various projections show the Social Security Trust will be exhausted or broke by 2042 or later. You get that? He continues, he wraps it up, he says, we explained to readers in an article on January 27 that even when the trust fund is exhausted, payroll taxes could continue to pay about 80% of scheduled benefits. Now, if you can untangle that sentence, you're better than me. And then he goes on to say, we will be sure to pass your comments to our reporters. So FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, replies. And this is just brilliant. This is just great. FAIR is grateful that USA Today reported about this issue. Or responded about this issue. Excuse me, they did not report about their response. Only FAIR reported about their response. Ullman claims, this is from FAIR now, Ullman claims that the word bankrupt can mean, quote, a situation in which obligations exceed revenue, a problem the Social Security system faces in about 15 years, end quote. It's a very peculiar definition of bankrupt, notes FAIR. that would apply to a program with more than $4 trillion in assets, as the Social Security system is projected to have in 15 years. In 15 years, when George Bush says they're going to be flat busted, bankrupt, the Social Security fund will have $4 trillion in it. Fair notes. The Gannett Company, which publishes USA Today, would love to be so bankrupt. Wouldn't we all? Allman goes on to then to say, quote, various projections show the Social Security Trust Fund will be exhausted or broke by 2042 or later, end quote. This, notes Fair, is a rhetorical sleight of hand. Switching from the Social Security system, as the article in question discussed, to the Social Security Trust Fund, which by two of the three projections made by the Social Security trustees will, in fact, eventually run out of money. That's the trust fund. Well, the fund was created just to deal with the boomers. But the Social Security system, unless the laws are changed, will continue to receive payroll taxes equal to roughly 12% of U.S. wages, a huge amount of money now, even larger in 2042. So it's hard to argue that the system is going to be bankrupt, let alone broke, exhausted, or flat busted. You get it? There's two different things here. There's the Social Security Trust Fund that was set up 15, 20 years ago to create a huge bulge of money to deal with the boomers. And then there's Social Security, which has been paying for itself since 1935 and will continue to forever if you simply lift the cap so that Bill Gates pays the same amount, the same percentage of his income into Social Security as you and I do. Why is USA Today? I can understand faux news. I get it, Fox News. But USA Today? Amazing. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive, and like the thousands of members at DemocraticMatch.com, you don't drink right-wing Kool-Aid. Right, Brush?
Right-wing wackos are fine to laugh at on all their radio programs, but no one wants to date one, right?
DemocraticMatch.com is a dating site made specifically for Democrats and other progressive individuals who want to date those with similar worldviews. What do you think of Democrats these days, Brush?
Democrats are smarter. Democrats are more evolved. Democrats are more fun. Democrats make better lovers. Democrats have better hearts.
This is your chance to meet other liberals who listen to Tom Hartman, people who cherish the principles of our democracy, believe in a woman's right to choose, believe in protecting our incredible planet. In short, DemocraticMatch.com gives you the opportunity to meet a real soulmate. So what have you got to lose? Sign up today at DemocraticMatch.com.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. GEICO. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider the Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Neil in Pittsburgh sends a note. He says, I've started listening to your show in Pittsburgh on WPTT anyway. He says, I'm 26 years old and thought you'd be interested in knowing that I received a letter from the Social Security Administration. Although they did not outright come out and support Bush's new overhaul, they did say this. And now Neil is quoting from the letter he received from the Social Security Administration. But now the Social Security system is facing serious future financial problems, and action is needed soon. You get this? Soon? To make sure that the system is sound when today's younger workers are ready for retirement. I'm 53. They didn't bother sending me a letter like this. Neil, 26, he gets this letter. This is targeted marketing, right? It goes on, Neil says. Unless action is taken soon to strengthen Social Security, in just 14 years, we will begin paying more in benefits than we collect in taxes. Well, let me interrupt the letter here. That's how it was designed. That's why during the Reagan administration, God bless him. I mean, one thing Ronald Reagan did right, they raised the Social Security tax to create a trust fund so that you'd have money left over so that when all those baby boomers, all those guys came home from World War II and they were lonely and all these babies got born. So it's, there is a surplus in there just waiting.
For when I become an old fart and retire, it's just sitting there waiting for me.
Anyhow, without changes by 2042, unless action is taken soon to strengthen Social Security in just 14 years, we will begin paying more in benefits than we collect in taxes. Without changes by 2042, this is again the letter from the Social Security Administration, the Social Security Trust Fund will be exhausted. Well, that's the point. It's supposed to be. The Trust Fund was to handle the bulge. It's like a rabbit going through a snake. Eventually, the snake is back to normal, right? And unless there's another world-shattering event, there's not going to be another demographic bulge. Anyhow, it goes on to say, by then, the number of Americans 65 or older is expected to have doubled. Yes, of course, that's the tail end of the baby boomers. There won't be enough younger people working to pay all the benefits owed to those who are retired. No, but they can pay at current rate, 80%. And if Bill Gates pays the same rate as you and me, all of it. But the Social Security Administration doesn't point that out. Instead, in their letter to Neil, they say, we will need to resolve, at that point, there will only be enough money to pay about 73 cents for each dollar of scheduled benefits. We will need to resolve these issues soon to make sure Social Security continues to provide a foundation of protection for future generations as it has done in the past. Neil says, they bolded a concise summary of this information later on. This is scary stuff, he notes. Using a government office to further a president's agenda. Didn't the Treasury Department pull the same stuff about a year ago? Anyway, I thought you might like to hear this. I can forward you the document through email or fax if you desire. Thanks and keep up the good work, Neil. Thanks, Neil. I appreciate it. I'll take your word for it. My experience has been that, by and large, in fact, without exception that I can think of, folks who listen to this program and provide information, generally it's pretty solid stuff, let's say. Here's Ray. I'm not sure where Ray is, where he's writing from. Anyhow, he says, he makes a fascinating point. He says, apparently, he's talking about the willingness of the cons to cut social programs and veterans benefits. He says, apparently those greedy SOBs don't realize that every dollar spent by the government to support the needy comes back to them as corporate profits. The needy can't hoard cash. They have no choice but to spend it. In fact, this will distribute more money to the more wealthy people than they'll ever see by spending it on missile defense systems that don't work. In the long run, does it make sense to remove this purchasing power from the economy? Well said, Roy. And, of course, this is how FDR got us out of the Great Depression. Make the government the employer of last resort, because poor people spend all their money. And that creates demand, and that brings entrepreneurs into the marketplace, and suddenly you've got an industrial powerhouse like the United States. Of course, Bush is reversing the process, but anyhow.
A party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there? Then the answer is no.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy.
No, his brother being there isn't the same.
But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
No, I don't care if he is old for his age.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
China has made a dramatic reversal in its energy policies. According to British newspaper The Independent, China has slowed or halted the building of 22 major dams and power stations out of concerns over the environmental impact. The Chinese State Environment Protection Agency says that the projects will not continue until a proper assessment of their impact is made. According to the Christian Science Monitor, a growing number of Chinese support tougher policies to protect nature. The move comes just in time for the implementation of the Kyoto Protocol on Wednesday. The United States is one of the few industrialized nations to not sign on to the Kyoto Protocol. The Bush administration cites growing pollution in China and the unwillingness of the Chinese government to intervene in the environment as one of the primary reasons for not joining.
Since Walmart announced last week that it's closing a store in Jonquière, Quebec that went union, the United Food and Commercial Workers Union has been gearing up to challenge the anti-union retail giant. UFCW Canada's Michael Fraser says public sentiment in Quebec is against Walmart's closing of the store because it went union.
There's been a very public reaction to their announcement because the people in Quebec believe that this is unfair. And the only reason that they're putting these people out of work is because of the fact that they exercise their democratic right to join a union.
Fraser says the UFCW will press the workers' case with Quebec's labor board, and that will include filing unfair labor practice charges against Walmart. Fraser vows the UFCW will continue its fight to organize Walmart. Fraser says a public campaign underway protesting Walmart's closing of the union store has taken on a life of its own as Walmart's true anti-worker nature is revealed. The UFCW says this is not about profit, it's about power.
New York State once again has the highest percentage of organized labor in the nation. New numbers from the U.S. Department of Labor show that more than 25% of New Yorkers hold union cards, an increase of nearly 1% over 2003. North Carolina picks up at the other end of the spectrum, where only 2.7% of the workers are members in a union. The Labor Department also released pay statistics that show full-time unionized workers on average earn $781 per week, while non-union workers on average earn $612 per week.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Today's average worker needs to work just 11 hours a week to produce the same standard of living a U.S. worker enjoyed in 1950. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says since 1975, worker productivity has gone up by nearly 70%. A worker today would have to work just 23 hours per week to enjoy the same living standard as the average worker in 1975. If society chose to do it, this huge gain in productivity could mean shorter work weeks, but in the U.S., high productivity has not resulted in shorter work weeks.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It was a slow day, and the sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road.
There was a bright... And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, bring them on in the chat room. Give us a call. We have a conservative in our chat room. It's great. It's absolutely great. I love it when somebody comes in and displays their confusion, shall we say. 1-866-889-8894. TomHartman.com, by the way, the website. However you spell it, it'll get you there. It's proper spelling, Tom with an H and Hartman with two N's. But in any case, TomHartman.com. Click on the chat room and takes you to the message board. You register there, and then you get into the chat room and drop in there and participate in live chat. A week after the most recent Gallup poll for CNN and USA Today revealed that Bush's approval rating shot up 57%, things have changed. Now, have you caught this? I think this is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. A week ago, there was this poll that was done. The Gallup poll for CNN was done. And it said Bush's approval rating was 57%, and it got all kinds of press. I mean, it was all over the place. It was everywhere.
Bush's approval rating, he must have gotten a bounce from the elections in Iraq. And everybody was wondering, you know, whoa, how did it jump so far so fast?
Well, it turned out that the Gallup organization, when they did that poll, had asked, let's see, I've got the list here. I'm trying to figure out which one it is. Here we go. 37% Republicans. This is the February 4 through 6 period. 37% of the people they interviewed were Republicans. 28% were Democrats. And guess what? Bush came out pretty good. And it made national news. I mean, it was national news. Bush's approval rating is up. All the corporate media trumpeted it. The White House is strutting about it. And then somebody points out. Well, actually, I pointed out on this radio program, and I'm guessing that some of my peers, you know, Randy Rhodes and whatnot, pointed out on their radio programs that looked like maybe the Gallup organization was fudging the numbers a little, or let's say they were suffering from what, back when I used to study biochemistry, was called sample bias. You've ever take a statistics course, you get this drilled into your head, right? Sample bias. And so last week they did another poll, and in which they asked 35% of the people who were Democrats and 34% Republicans. In other words, about 50-50. Instead of the previous 37% Republicans, 28% Democrats. And guess what? Bush's 57% approval rating is suddenly 49%.
What a surprise!
It's fallen from 57 to 49%. It's an 8-point drop in a week. Have you seen that on the news? No, the Gallup organization and CNN and USA Today dropped this into the Friday mix, you know, the end of the day Friday, where news just doesn't quite become news. So. But the Bush administration is very good at managing the news. For Team Bush, as Ken Herman points out, Cox News Service article, for Team Bush, the communications goal is to get around the national media the GOP believes stands between the president and the people. I would say it's to deceive us. And by the way, this isn't something unique to the Bush administration. The Clinton administration did their share of this. The Bush administration before them, the Reagan administration before them. And that's when it really started. Ronnie Reagan came in with all these Hollywood guys and all these PR folks and all this big money from the oil industry, and they started the PR presidencies. And we had never had that before in this country. And we are suffering from it, in my opinion. From how the message is delivered, to who is in the audience to hear it, to who gets to ask the questions about it, the White House goal is control, notes Ken Herman. Tactics include public events, sometimes called conversations, sometimes called forums, sometimes called town hall meetings, featuring Bush. Last Thursday, for example, he had a town hall meeting on strengthening Social Security in Raleigh, North Carolina, and a conversation on strengthening Social Security in Bluebell, Pennsylvania. Regardless of the name, notes Ken Herman, the events, such events are always the same. Bush as congenial host with hand-picked onstage guests with stories to prove the president's point. In fact, these are always ticketed events. You have to have a ticket to get in. He's the president of the United States. But sorry, you may be a citizen, but you can't come in without a ticket. Well, how do I get a ticket? Talk to the Republican Party. Is this starting to sound like the USSR to you? Remember the Soviet Union? Odds are most of you have not been. I was there. I was inside the Soviet Union when it was the Soviet Union. I was in East Germany when it was East Germany. And I was in Russia. Actually, I was in Russia the week of the very first elections when Zhirinovsky and Yeltsin were running against each other after the fall of the USSR. Big difference, by the way. But I can tell you, when it was the USSR, it wasn't the government that ran the government. It was the party that ran the government. And if you weren't affiliated with the party, you didn't get to participate in anything that had to do with governance. So, for example, North Dakota Governor John Hovind, one of the folks who is one of the local folks who's part, you know, going to be hosting one of these events, these ticketed events. His aide, James Burgum, gets marching orders from the White House advance staff. Inside the box of tickets, this article by Ken Herman, titled How to Get Straight to the People, Control the Message Stage of the Event, by the Cox, distributed by Cox News Service. Inside the box of tickets and other event materials he got from the White House was a list passed down by the advance team of people it deemed could be disruptive to the event. Burgum said volunteers were told it was a do not admit list. Do not admit! Now, who were these horrible people? Were they terrorists? Were they convicted felons? Were they people who had committed crimes? Were they people who had threatened the lives of the president? No! They were people who had showed up at the Fargo-Moorhead Democracy for Action meetup group. I think they mean Democracy for America. The Howard Dean organization. In other words, they were Democrats. Democrats. You can't let in any Democrats. Because they might be disruptive to the event. Put them on the do not admit list. I'm telling you, the party is running the government, not we the people. And that ain't America. That is not the America that I grew up in. That is not the America that Jefferson, Madison, Washington, that even Hamilton and Adams, even the conservatives back then, it is not the America that they fought for, that they died for, that they lived for, that they worked for. None of them. Dwight Eisenhower, the great Republican president, Barry Goldwater, the stalwart of the conservative, are rolling over in their grave looking at what these people are doing, calling themselves Republicans. They're Stalinists. I am ranting, I realize, but I just don't, I don't know what else to, how else can you define it? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Alice in Humboldt County, California. Hey, Alice, welcome to the program.
Yeah, well,
Have I worked up your dander here, Alice?
Yes, I think that was wonderful. I was born in Fargo, North Dakota.
Oh, really? Oh, well,
yeah.
A great deja vu.
And a blizzard.
Yeah, no doubt. They have a lot of them there.
Do you understand why Bush has been wanting to destroy Social Security for so long?
Oh, sure. Because the Republicans have been wanting to destroy Social Security since FDR first proposed it. They fought it tooth and nail. There was not one single Republican vote to enact Social Security back when the program was first put into place. All along, they've considered it socialism. They've thought it was something that shouldn't exist, in my opinion. I mean, do you have a different take on it, Alice? I mean, I'm pretty sure those are the historical facts.
Well, I don't know what we'd do without it.
I agree. And for any of us who are not rich. But
that's
you got to
right.
Keep in mind, the GOP has been, ever since it was taken over in the 1870s, between 1872 and 1876, prior to 1872, the Republicans were actually the party of reform, and the Democrats were the corrupt party of slavery. But after 1872, 1876, in that period there, you had Ulysses S. Grant coming in, and the Republican Party sold its soul to the railroads, and they've been the party of the rich and the well-bred ever since. They have been the party of wealth and privilege, period. And they try to repackage it, and they trot out Rush Limbaugh and all these other cons, and they have nice, smiles and cute voices and nice slogans. But the bottom line is, in their world, if you're not rich, then, too bad. Take a leap. I mean, it's really Calvinism repackaged. John Calvin had this idea, which was very popular in the 1600s, 1700s. In fact, the Calvinists, who were the early settlers of the Massachusetts, came over from England. John Calvin had this idea that if you were rich, that was proof that God loved you. That was proof that you were blessed by God, that you were a virtuous person. And therefore, rich people could do no harm. And if somebody was poor, that was a sign that they had sinned. It might have been a secret sin. They may not be drunkards. They may not be licentious. There may not be no obvious sin, but obviously they have sinned because they're poor. This was John Calvin's idea, and this is Calvinism revisited, and they're turning it into an art form into politics. Alice, thanks for the call.
Keep up the good work, Tom.
Thank you. You too, Alice. Keep spreading the message. I do appreciate hearing from you. Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom. Yeah, if I was inclined to go see Shrub down here in the Albuquerque vicinity, I'm sure I'd be on that list also.
Dare to show up at one of these Dean meetups?
Me and the Secret Service had a lengthy conversation on why I couldn't walk across blank, empty desert a half a mile from the high school that Cheney was appearing at last summer.
You're kidding.
But that's... No.
What happened?
Well, they told us that we were supposed to be over in this First Amendment zone. I said, well, hell, I thought the whole country was the First Amendment zone. I'm out here in public property out in the middle of the desert.
Yeah. Well, that's what the Constitution says. The whole country is a free speech zone.
He kind of said, you need to get across that street or I'll break your back before you hit the ground.
Really?
And, that was implied.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really the reason that I called.
Okay.
My big concern right now, particularly, I just heard that Pryor got renominated under this radar.
Not just Pryor. I mean, there's a...
Well, there was a whole slew of them.
Yeah, this is
Pryor, to me, was the name that just nailed it.
Yeah.
What are the tactics if Frist drives through the rule change to to stop the filibustering. Where can we possibly go? This is, I think this is the thing that has scared me the most over the last few months when, yeah. when it became apparent that they were kind of headed that way. Because it's yeah. like every check and balance then will be completely gone.
Yeah, it's in my list of stuff for today, and I literally have not gotten halfway through the list of stuff that I was going to talk about on the air. And it is, as you say, Roy, it is one of the most important issues of our time. The Democrats have cooperated with the Republicans in passing through Congress, in certifying, or whatever the word is, more judges than the Republicans did in 4 years of the Bush administration than the Republicans did in the 8 years of the Clinton administration. They talk about obstructionists. I mean, the Republicans were really good at that. There were a lot of empty, because they thought the Republican administration was coming, and they wanted there to be a lot of empty seats to fill.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, they were right, and it happened, and there's all these empty seats, but there's these crackpot judges. And I have a list of them here. And I have the details of why they are crackpot judges.
They are scary, and
they're beyond scary, Roy. We are talking about Nazis here. I mean, we're talking about serious Nazis. People. Well,
Hitler took Germany over by taking over the courts.
Well, in part,
it was all said and done.
In part, I'd say in the beginning, he took Germany over by taking over the people, by convincing the people that they were under attack and that they had to be afraid.
Yeah, that was phase one.
And we have
now moved to phase two.
Yeah. Well, I'll get into this tomorrow because there's just not time. I mean, we're at the end of the day here,
right.
and the phone lines are all lighting up and whatnot. So,
okay.
But you have put your finger on it. I do appreciate it. And
keep it up.
Thank
I'll
you.
See you later.
You too.
Take
yeah.
care.
Good to hear from you, Roy. Senator Debbie Stabenow and Senator Patty Murray today described the efforts by President Bush to heap $5 trillion of debt onto future generations by privatizing Social Security. This was a news release they issued yesterday, so it was their Valentine's Day gift. Stabenow and Murray unveiled a $5 trillion present. The president intends to give China and Japan. See, they're the ones who hold our debt. They're the ones that we have to make the interest payments to, and the Saudis. And, of course, you know, the few wealthy families like the Bush family who are well invested in treasuries. $5 trillion. Well, it's, you know, after you pay the interest, it adds up. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a 4-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
With a Workers Independent News feature story, I'm Jesse Russell. Tuesday marked the 5th anniversary of low-power FM radio's existence, and the Federal Communications Commission heard from advocates of micro-radio, making good on a promise to consider the low-power community broadcaster's contribution to the media landscape. D.C. radio co-op Selena Masuta was at the FCC.
Low-power FM truly represents a unique opportunity to give new voice to old communities. And so it really holds a special place in our heart here at the Federal Communications Commission.
That was outgoing FCC chairperson Michael Powell addressing hundreds of low-power FM advocates. Low-power FM is community-based, non-commercial radio stations that cover about a 3 to 7 mile radius. LPFM broadcasters say that their operations are being hindered by FCC and congressional rulings. Some LPFM broadcasters have waited as long as 5 years to receive confirmation for their licenses and travel to D.C. to urge the action. Some of what people like Anthony Mazza with Prometheus Radio and LPFM Advocacy Group are asking the FCC includes opening the door for more LPFM stations to be formed, especially after proving that the creation of these stations would not affect the signal of commercial stations.
The FCC is waiting for word from Congress that they can move forward on their original vision. It's the opinion of a lot of low-power stations and Prometheus Radio that the FCC can do things on their own without waiting for an okay from Congress.
Lucas Benitez of Immokalee, Florida, spoke at the FCC hearing. Benitez's radio station has become the gathering point for Immokalee's mostly immigrant farm working community.
In Immokalee, we have the indigenous people from Mexico, from Guatemala, and the first language is Cancobal, Mam, Quiche, Toxil from Mexico. So we have people in the radio programs that give this programs in their own language.
For Workers Independent News, I am Selena Masuda, reporting from Washington, D.C.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
For united we stand, divided we fall. And if our backs should ever be against the wall, we'll be together, together, you and I.
See, that's creating a brand. That's our tribe here. Where despair is not an option, get active. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. The RNC issued a press release. The Republican National Committee went so far as to issue a press release attacking a group called the Campaign for America's Future. Why? What would get the RNC so flipped out that they'd issue a press release attacking the group called the Campaign for America's Future, whose website, by the way, is ourfuture.org. Well, it turns out the Campaign for America's Future reports attacked by the RNC showed that a typical 20-year-old worker would lose $152,000 in guaranteed Social Security benefits if the president's plan to privatize Social Security is implemented. And they go through, they've got all the details here. You know, the RNC plays a numbers game to obscure the facts. RNC exaggerates stock market gains. RNC implies president's plan is worse than bankrupt. RNC didn't read the Campaign for America's Future analysis. RNC doesn't know, you know, it just goes on. And I'm not going to get into all the details here. But basically, these guys did the math. And if we do privatize Social Security, the average 20-year-old worker today will get $152,000 less than they would get under the current system. Now, in the meantime, we have this marvelous letter to the editor of the Wall Street Journal from Larry Jacobson in Santa Monica, California. He says, what is the inherent fairness of... here's the conservative mindset for you. What is the inherent fairness of calling upon the current working generation to fix a problem created by and for the now retired population? In other words, it's all those old farts' fault. Today's retirees elected FDR, who created Social Security. Oh, yes. They deserve everything they get. And then he goes on to say, then responded to the post-World War II economic boom by creating the massive demographic known as the baby boomers. In other words, the economy got good, so they had... I think it had something to do with a war, Larry, but sometimes conservatives don't read history real well, so... In any case, he goes on, now the elder population insists on having their children subsidized through higher taxes.
the flawed system today's workers did nothing to create. We should look to the retired generation to bear responsibility for curing the system that they created. Yes, those old folks in the retirement homes who voted for FDR. How dare they? They voted for FDR. Make them pay. Yes. So that their children and grandchildren won't suffer the perverse consequences of living in dramatically less prosperous times than did our progenitors. Sorry, Larry, but we're living in dramatically less prosperous times now than we were 20 years ago because of 20 years of conservative economic policies of what George Herbert Walker Bush called voodoo economics, supply-side economics, massive debt, military spending out of control, cronyism, corruption, Star Wars. And let us not forget, tax cuts for the rich. The billionaires for Bush are having a good time. And old Larry thinks it's the old farts in the rest homes who should take all the blame. Poor Larry. It's really tragic. I'm Tom Hartman. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience.